Hello, I'm Dr. Gay Carlson, president of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, with number 29 of my screenside chats for our ACAP members. My goal with the chats is to share timely clinical practice and other important information from experts on key topics during the COVID-19 pandemic. Reminiscent of President Roosevelt's fireside chats during the Great Depression and World War II, I've wanted the topics to be informative, relevant, and interesting. Today, we're continuing the theme of the crisis in child mental health and access to care. This is an international problem, not just a US problem. In fact, YACAPAP, the Association of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry and Allied Professionals, WPA, the World Psychiatric Association, and ACAP, are looking to partner among themselves and other stakeholders to develop a strategic plan for global child and adolescent mental health priorities. On a somewhat smaller scale today, I've invited an old friend and colleague from Schneider Children's Medical Center of Israel to talk to us about how they're managing mental health services, not only with COVID, but with the renewed hostilities in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. At the moment, at least in the United States, we're not hurling bombs at each other, but we certainly know how complicated it is to cope not only with a pandemic, but with very divided politics. So we have some kinship in both of those areas. Dr. Silvana Fennig has been the director of the Department of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Schneider Children's Medical Center since 2014. She's also the director of the inpatient unit at the medical center since 1996. She's an associate professor at the Sackler Medical School at Tel Aviv University and chair of their Child and Adolescent Psychiatry Division. She's leading the program of continuous medical education in child and adolescent psychiatry for the last 15 years. In addition to her various administrative responsibilities, her particular specialties are in psychiatry within primary care and forensics, and also in child and adolescent eating disorders and psychotherapy, including motivational interviewing. So, Dr. Fennig, why don't we start with talking about how Israeli children and youth, and those of you who are caring for their mental health, how did they adapt to the quarantine? Were there increased demands for mental health programs? Did you find a way to cope with these increased demands if they were there?
Okay, thank you very much for having me here. And I'm so glad to chat with you. And that's reminded me of early conversations about dilemmas, about how to deal with medical problems and mental health problems with kids a long time ago. But I think that the only positive thing, if something positive about this pandemic, is that we are confronting the similar problems all over the world. As you say, this is a global problem, but with kind of local flavor due to historical questions or backgrounds and cultural background, and with the different mental health services here in Israel. And answering your question, we have a dramatic increase of mental health problems here in Israel. But I divide this in kind of different phases. And I think that they are similar all over the world. We have at the beginning, like a month, a close and very strict quarantine. That means families were at home, kids were at home, and we saw a real, a true decrease in psychopathology, maybe sometimes due to there were not referrals. We are not prepared to physical continuation of face-to-face outpatient services. We are not prepared with the new technology. That was a process about the virtual technology. And people were not coming to our outpatient services. And the other side, we saw that was a true, what we call honeymoon. And I don't know if you saw this in the state, but families were at home, another time coming back to this routine of being at home, eating meals together and watching TV together and playing and talking and being involved. And in the inpatient unit, that was a similar question. We saw patients trying to deal with problems. The outside enemy was the COVID, and the kids were together with us trying to deal and to cope with the new situation. That's mean 1 month or 1.5 months, we saw a decrease in referrals. The second stage, it was a gradual stage that was enough time to be together. No kids nowhere going to school, no structured routine. Parents were concerned about financial problems. Kids were exposed to toxic levels of media. This cocktail, I call this is an explosive cocktail, was gradually, we saw gradually the increase, the sharp rise in referrals and psychopathology, and was terrible. I need to say that in Israel, we had already very good services, but we didn't have enough human resources. We didn't have enough professionals to take care of this increase and incredible and dramatic demands. That means we had this sharp increase. We didn't know how to deal with that. We're in the train of learning new ways to provide help, but that was the question. And I think that we have a third phase. And the third phase was together with the vaccination. We had an early phase of vaccination here in Israel, and they were talking about come back to school. The moment that the kids understood that they need to come back to school, that was another rise, another sharp rise in referrals. That's mean kids were afraid of coming back to the academic demands and being in the jungle of the school another time and not knowing how to awake in the morning, and was another rise of suicide and depression and a lot of psychopathology. And we didn't come back to the plateau. Then was another rise.
So it went up. And then up.
And because we had another two stages in Israel, these were special stages. And I say this is a local. That's one, not a global pandemic. And you talk about this before that. At the end of this year, where the kids were coming to be used to be at school, and parents were used to go to work and try to find out how to deal with those financial problems. We had this, I call this a small war, 3 weeks of another kind of conflict, was not COVID, was another rise of this always present Palestinian-Israeli conflict. We had the bombing, and we have a new kind of phase that we didn't know exactly until now. We were aware of that, but was an inner conflict, a very dramatic inner conflict of kind of a civilian problem inside of Israel between these two people, these two states, these two nations, and was dormant, was kind of under the ground, but we knew, we were aware that this will explode. And then 3 weeks, another time ending this sharp increase. Families were in the shelters. They were not at home or like in the COVID. Were the shelters with a lot of anxiety. Parents were very anxious, and kids, and I will not compare what the kids at Gaza were experiencing, because it was terrible. Okay, my field is not politics. I'm a psychiatrist, but I need to say that that Gaza kids were dying. In Israel, there were also some kids that die and people, but was a completely different intensity. And our problems, there are different than the problems of Gaza, at Gaza, And I'm not talking about Gaza because I'm not working there, but I know that this terrible period of time, the kids, and I'm looking from the perspective of kids and my professional point of view about the kids, I know that these terrible traumas will stay and we will have the consequences going on in Israel and in Gaza. That means we have different stages, and I think that we need to know the different stages, but we didn't come back to the same level before the corona or before the conflict. We stay a high rise, and I think this will stay for a long period of time.
That's part of the reason that I thought it would be interesting or useful or whatever to talk to you, because I think the notion of crisis on crisis is mind-boggling, and I think we do need to be able to converse with each other across country lines. I don't know if you've come up with any, I won't say solutions, you're clearly not going to have a solution, but what have you done to try to mitigate the problems? What have you done? Because the overwhelming the resources is something that we're all concerned with. You said you had a good system before this. We don't even have such a hot system in the United States. So to take a system that was already limping and then put COVID on top of that, and then put the divisiveness of our politics on top of that, it's really quite a toxic mix. So how have you been able to manage stretching your services or coping with the need that you clearly discern?
Well, this is an excellent question, because we are dealing from then until now, because we stay with a high level of demand, and we that well, I think that crisis was an excellent time for creative solutions. That's meaning, in general, you are not doing some kind of services. When you have this crisis, you need to manage and you need to provide services, because kids are in pain and family are suffering. That means we have all this adrenaline going on and urgency. I think that there are global kind of things that we went through the same, because I was seeing the screen side chats from the beginning, and in the beginning was the kind of telepsychiatry. I remember that. And we learn these tools too. That mean was a kind of relaxation of and more permissive way to provide services, and we start to learn this new technology, and we start to learn the properties of this new technology, that they are excellent. I learned for many and many research that we have this excellent tool that we can provide almost the same things that we're providing face to face. I think that professionals in general doesn't like this virtual way to provide the psychotherapy or assessments, but the properties were great, and we learned that we can make the same therapeutic alliance that face-to-face, and we start to use with difficulties, because the organizations were very carefully giving us the tools, but we need to be careful about privacy, and we start to do more and more assessments, urgent assessment, like in the emergency room, and psychotherapy, and that was a great tool. One of the things that we learned to provide a lot of help in 1 hour was a group therapy, and not therapy. We are providing parents. We use parents as a good therapist. We have an history here in Israel of giving parents psychoeducation, and that's enough. But we are treating the kids, and parents, we are providing education. But now I think that we are providing parents skills and tools, because they are the primary cares of the kids there at home. And we learn And we need to learn this tool. That's not easy to provide to 100 of parents, as a group of 100 of parents, providing help to treat a kid with behavioral problems or with eating disorder or with anxiety. And that was a learning. We learned together, parents and professionals, how to do this group treatments. I call treatment because we provide skills, but this is a treatment to provide calm, and parents were less distressed, doing what to do. And they were talking, they talk, and we continue this 2 times a week. We have this parent group for eating disorder and 2 times a week for anxiety. And this is a great technology that enables us to provide parents help at home. Now, we already learned.
Let me just ask you, yes, the organizational piece of that. So somebody calls up and says, my child won't get out of bed, or my child is having terrible temper tantrums, or my child is, threatening to kill himself or whatever. How do you triage that?
Okay. The first thing is, we are not providing this to all psychopathology. We have a specific group for eating disorder, and we have a specific group for anxiety. Mm-hmm. There are two different kind of groups, and we can say to the parents, okay, we don't have the complete services. Now, we have huge waiting lists, because that's what happened. We have huge waiting lists, but we may provide to you some tools that you can keep and going and treat your child and at least stop the deterioration. Mm-hmm. This is a partial help. That's not the regular service. You will wait for the regular and complete services. We will provide you a group of parents that are meeting with professionals, and we will give you some tips how to do what to do at home. Mm-hmm. This is coming through the HMOs. That means you will need some authorization for your HMO, and you will be able to come to this group. And these are hours. There are two times a week with a specific hour, and you will come to these groups and we will talk. You will continue to be at your pediatrician in follow-up if it's needed. And if you need another kind of help, this is what we can provide. We cannot provide psychological treatment now for your child, and we cannot provide psychiatric help now. We have an emergency outpatient service. This is not the service that we are providing. That means it's a specific service for the waiting list, mm-hmm. for the time that you are waiting to receive the complete service. These are the groups. Mm-hmm. Another thing that we were doing, and that were used for at least 6 years, because the HMOs came, it was a reform in mental health, and the HMOs were taking the responsibility for the services. And we are used to provide that in the state, very short-term psychotherapy or services or pharmacotherapy. And we have this very, very short, and we use now very ultra-brief psychotherapy for suicide. Suicide, the kids cannot help. They cannot wait for months and receive help. That means suicide is one of these urgencies. This service was under research, and we proved that if you can give a crisis intervention of 6 sessions, we can decrease the urgency. That doesn't mean that the kid received all the services and all the therapy.
We're stopping the bleeding.
That's it. Stopping the bleeding, like you say. And that's a great, we got great results. And I think that this is one other way that we found that is very specific for specific kids, like suicidal kids. And we have other creative solutions, like helping pediatricians. I think that you have this already in the state, but we start a project with the help of an organization from the state. We call this Children's Health Alliance for Israel. They're helping us with a project, a big project, and to help pediatricians to provide crisis intervention. But mostly, I think that the help for pediatricians will be to make efficient referrals. We think that pediatricians are referring kids in general. You know, we need your help, and that's it. They are waiting for a psychologist or for a psychiatrist in general because we don't know what's going on. We need your help. And I think that kids are waiting sometimes because they have a learning disorder. They are not doing the diagnosis and they are not going to this specific examination for a child with learning disorders. So they are waiting for 3 and 4 months with the same kid that has depression, anxiety, eating disorders. You know, we are trying to find a way how pediatricians can help us to make the efficient and intelligent referrals. And that's a good thing. And another way is to provide emergency services in our outpatient clinic. That means not to go to the emergency room. Emergency room, we are working in a general children's hospital. Our emergency room is a general children's hospital emergency room with psychiatric services. Mm-hmm. And kids mm-hmm. are waiting there at night because they are coming afternoon. The parents are not working anymore. They are coming to the emergency room, going through all the waiting list and coming to the emergency room, and they hope that they can receive a good treatment. That's not the right way. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to pull these people to our outpatient clinic. Because during the day and having the right information and the right services outside in the community is a better service than the emergency room that is not helping the kid to get services. It's only deciding about inpatient or not inpatient.
Right, right. Liver die, no other thought.
Yeah, that's it. That means we are trying to find more creative solutions, but we found that now we are good in the new technology and using the new technology in a kind of how we call this hybrid way or kind of mixing the face-to-face with the virtual encounters.
It sounds like you've really pulled together the team of people that you have to come up with creative solutions. What you can temporize for a certain amount of time, which is, you know, you've got to do that. You've got your fingers in the dike, but at some point you need to rebuild the dike. What are you doing at that point? What are you doing for the longer term? How are you preparing for the longer term people that you can't keep putting off because they just don't get better?
Well, I think that we need to learn more to cooperate with parents. This is, we found this very helpful mm-hmm. To help parents to take care of the kids. I don't think that the demand for more and more psychiatrists or mental health professionals will help us. We are asking for that. But this is another service that in kind of a month will be full. And I think that we need to work more with the schools and provide with the school with some kind of tools that they can use and help the front line. We cannot avoid that. All the kids cannot come to us. We need to all the community to be involved with mental health. And the kids are coming to us and waiting, and they're coming too late. Mm-hmm. And the right way to confront this problem is to provide the primary care, the pediatricians, the family physicians, the schools, and all the community, the social services with more help. This cannot be that we are alone and providing help. We are, I think that here in Israel, we have like 300 child psychiatrists, and that's all. And that's incredible, but we cannot, and this is an increase. I think that that's not only the corona, it's more awareness about the needs. And in Schneider, that was a kind of hospital for physical problems, and more and more we are seeing that our outpatient is the biggest, more than any other kind of endocrinology, you know, diabetes or nephrology or oncology. We are the more populated and with huge waiting lists. That means it's something that's going on, that people are more aware, we are doing more diagnosis, or they are more suffering and kids are in need. And we need to prepare other people and all the community to help us. And this is the way that we are seeing that.
So there's almost, I won't go so far as to call it a silver lining, but I think we've all become aware of the fact that, I can't remember who is it that said no good crisis should go to waste, that maybe we finally have mental health getting some respect here, recognizing how much it pervades life in general, and that it's, I don't know, maybe everybody's responsibility makes it a little bit dilute, but it is something where we end up needing to save our personal resources in child psychiatry for the very special situations that need that kind of intervention. But our other responsibility is to figure out how to use other agencies, as you say, teachers, parents, primary care doctors, et cetera, to learn how to do the pieces that they can do.
Sure. I think that I learned this for my daughter. She's working in Canada with refugees. And she showed me a videotape that about mothers, I think that there are grandmothers in Zimbabwe that they were providing, they're good listeners. And they were sitting in bench and providing support for people that are in need. That's what I mean about the involving the community. Mm-hmm. That's meant that we can provide some common elements that are not professional elements, but they are listening to people that they are suffering. And that's what I mean about the community, to be more aware that we don't need to be afraid of people that they have some mental needs or mental health needs and provide this. And for sure, the frontline, the agencies, what you call.
Well, this has been really interesting, Silvana. I knew it would be. And I think you've really given us some inspirational ideas about how we can perhaps help each other around the world to be able to help, at least if we can't cure the mental health problems of the world, maybe we can at least put them into a more manageable area. So I thank you very much. And I thank our audience very much for tuning in.
Well, thank you for having me. And we can continue to chat in the next session.
Yes, happy to do that. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much for tuning in. This is Gay Carlson for ACAP's Screenside Chats.
Provide Screenside Chats as a member in public service, but it is neither a legal interpretation nor a statement of ACAP policy. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by ACAP. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their participation in Screenside Chats does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of ACAP or any of its officials.